We've talked a bit about the power of prayer and spirituality in healing on the podcast. Today, I want to delve more into this. And specifically, I want to talk about the mind-body connection, because I think people think of these as separate entities when in fact they are the same thing. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkleman, flying solo today. And I hope you enjoyed the guest, Dr. Dick Tom, and that podcast. It was really enlightening. And I did get some questions about the podcast. And what I wanted to do is a follow-on talk today that delves more into some of the aspects of spirituality as it relates to healing. And I think I said this in one of the podcasts last time, is do you believe you're a spiritual being having a physical experience, or do you believe you're a physical being having a spiritual experience? Because I think that impacts so many things in our lives, and particularly relating to health, because if you just believe that you're physical and there's a spiritual thing that happens every once in a while, then your way of looking at healing is going to be more, I'll say, mainstream, for lack of a better way of saying it, although I think natural medicine has become pretty mainstream in this country at this point. But you're going to look more for physical solutions. You're going to look for surgeries. You're going to look for pharmacological solutions. And I think that part of the issue with that is that I don't know if that's the reality of things. And it certainly becomes trickier when healing isn't available. And unfortunately, that's the reality of life, is sometimes healing isn't available. From the standpoint of the physical ailment isn't going to go away. And I think that another way of looking at this is, do you believe that we're mechanisms, that we're mechanical, or do you believe that we're more like a garden? And this is actually something from Chinese medicine. If you look at the body as mechanical, then you're going to treat that as you might your car, where the body, you can replace parts when things wear out, or you can, I mean, people are working on getting new bodies, basically taking their brain and putting it in a new container. There's actually recently an article that I was reading that apparently there is an open mic discussion between, I think it was Kim Jong and Xiaoping, or maybe it was Putin. It was during that summit in China, and they were talking about making themselves immortal, in effect. And that's sort of the piece about this. Now, if you believe you're a spiritual being and a physical body, you already think you're immortal, which is kind of interesting. You just know that your form is going to change. And it's interesting. I mean, going back to the car example, I have friends that will buy the same car over and over again. And, you know, their car gets old and then they have it. Usually they drive Toyotas. In here in Hawaii, everyone drives it. Not everyone, but a lot of people drive Toyota Tacoma trucks. And as soon as that they're, you know, they need a new car, they just replace it with the same car. But I know other people who are like, yeah, I'm tired of that. I want to try something different. I want to drive a different car this time. And there's an element of that sometimes, I think, in terms of how we approach health and healing, in that you want everything to be the same, or you want to try something different, and you try new things with your body, or you try new sports, or whatever it is. But it's interesting in terms of healing, we are not like cars. Cars at this point cannot self-heal. They can't flush their brake fluid by themselves. They can't change the oil by themselves. You kind of get the idea. Whereas in our bodies, the bodies are more, and this is where the Chinese medicine says it's more like a garden. Gardens are tended. They're not healed. You keep watering things. You give nutrients. You pull weeds. You make beds. You are in alignment with the garden doing what it's doing. I mean, you can let it go and it will grow, at least in some places here in Hawaii and where I used to live in Oregon, things grow all the time. And many of the things that are growing, you don't necessarily want there, but things grow easily. And Dr. Tom lives in Arizona and things don't grow as easily there in the desert. It's a different experience, but I see the body more as a garden in that there are things that you can tend and nurture and bring conditions to grow certain things. And not all of our bodies, even though the physiology is the same, as Dr. Tom was saying, the pancreas basically works the same for all 8 billion people on the planet for the most part. I mean, the function is the same, but there are differences, and it's what you are putting the attention to make things happen or not happen. And a good example of this is athletics, right? If someone has athletic ability and they nurture that talent, they can go on and develop more capability in that particular sport. But if they don't have athletic ability to begin with, it's not that nurturing it won't do something. It's that they won't necessarily make it to a pro league with that nurturing. They might have fun, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. It's just understanding what the strengths and weaknesses are for that particular person. That's why I think that if, as we look at this, and as we look at, are you a spiritual being having a physical experience, or are you a physical being having a spiritual experience? I think that understanding that we're not as mechanical as Western medicine sort of looks at the body. And I think that, you know, Dr. Tom mentioned has a patient who has a headache and they take a Tylenol, and he says, well, does that mean you have a Tylenol deficiency? And it's like, I think that's true with a lot of medications. We take things thinking that we have a deficiency, even when we take SSRIs thinking that we have a serotonin deficiency. Some people do have lower serotonin and some people don't. And I have a podcast about this, and I talk about how it's not about your serotonin levels, because most of your serotonin, by the way, is in your gut. And sometimes your serotonin level spikes when you get food poisoning, for example. And so the serotonin's there to help you flush out the invaders, the things that you don't want. So that, you know, it's not necessarily about the serotonin, the overall serotonin level. And it's not necessarily even about serotonin levels in the synaptic junction, although we treat that. We treat that naturally, and, you know, with vitamins and the Walsh protocol. And we treat, and it's treated with SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. But is it that the person has a SSRI deficiency? No, absolutely not. It may be that their serotonin is low, but it could also be something else. And this is where I want to talk about the mind-body connection, because it's really not separate, right? What really is interesting about this piece of things is that our mind and our body, we have a dualistic way of looking at them in this society. And we can go back to Descartes and Galileo, and sort of back in the 1600s, there were a bunch of scientists who, they were actually very spiritual, by the way. This is where alchemy kind of, I mean, alchemy's older than that, but a lot of the alchemical stuff that then becomes chemistry started from a spiritual perspective, started from how do we transform the person? How do we transform the body to be a better container for spirit? It's a very old idea in the mystical literature. And the problem was, is that the church got upset, the Catholic Church, and they started persecuting people. This is when we get the Cartesian split between what is the spirit and what is the physical realm. And the problem is that we're seeing that play out in our society right now. We're seeing how we are moving towards making decisions as a society in our politics, for example, that are devoid of some of the aspects that are more intangible in terms of mind and spirit. And, you know, the livability index in a lot of American cities is pretty low compared to other parts of the world. I actually think Honolulu is the most livable city in the United States on this world index. But it's like, I think it's like 25 or 26. So that means there's a lot more places in the world that are more livable than anywhere in the United States. I bring this up because I think that there is definitely a connection between my work and what I see with mental health and the aspects of things that are happening in our society. And I don't think that you can ignore that. Let's take a quick break, and in a sec, I'll talk more about that in the second part of the show. And welcome back. I'm Dr. Gill, your host of Ask Dr. Gill. And if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to put a comment below. If you're on a like YouTube or some other format that you can do that with, or send me an email to info@askdrgill.com. And I'm happy to reply if you have a question about something. We're talking about basically spirituality and health right now. And I started with, how do you see the world in terms of, are you a spiritual person having a physical experience? Or are you a physical person having a spiritual experience? And I think that at this juncture in history, we are seeing a desire, if you will, to kind of bring those back together. And that's been my experience talking to patients and people. And it's interesting in terms of health, because as I was saying in the first part of the show, the fact that people view mind and body as separate is a really intriguing piece to me, because they're not. And even the way the scientific literature discusses it versus what they're actually seeing, we see this split, right? So I mentioned this treatment in the podcast. It's Solomon Auricular Allergy Treatment, SAAT. And It's used to treat MCAS, but it can be used for other things. And what's interesting is that it is mediated by the vagus nerve. So the vagus nerve is important in so many aspects. And I have a podcast that I talked about attachment theory, which I'm going to do another one, by the way, because it looked like it was really popular and people are really interested in this theory. And there's more to say about it. But the vagus nerve is sort of the brakes. It helps the body rest. It helps the body digest. It helps the body heal. And I think that when you look at the literature and when there's vagus nerve dysfunction, you have all these inflammatory cascades happening. And I don't want to go into the details of this at the moment because it's beyond the scope of this particular podcast. But it's interesting in that what we see is that this process actually goes two ways. So you can have a vagal dystonia, so there's a dysfunction that happens, cortisol spikes, and people feel stressed, right? You're driving along, we've all experienced this. You're driving on the freeway, someone cuts you off, you have to slam on the brakes real quick. You know, you're sort of amped up in that. And it can affect all kinds of things in your body, both temporarily or even long-term. But the flip side is true too, right? So you can be all stressed out and go and meditate and breathe, and that'll calm your system down. And you'll become less stressed. And there's people who, by the way, who had autoimmune diseases who started meditating, really debilitating arthritis. And they went and lived in an ashram for a while and just meditated and did whatever yoga they could do. And they started getting better. It's really quite remarkable. So this is where I say mind-body connection, it's really one word. It's not mind-body, it's mind-body one word because they're one thing. Where does spirit fit into this? And this becomes a much deeper conversation because I think that there are things that happen in our lives that we have no explanation for. Like they're seemingly random. And when we look at quantum physics, you start to kind of get a sense of this. Einstein is famous for saying God doesn't play dice with the universe, having to do with this, having to do with what is happening at the surface and above. There's something underneath it that's pulling strings. And there's a physicist who actually worked with Einstein. They wrote some papers together, David Bohm. And David Bohm there's a book, and I cannot think of the title right now of it, but it's basically conversations with a mystic named Krishnamurti. And David Bohm has proposed a theory that he calls it the implicate and the explicate order. And it's almost like the universe is on a stage, if you will. And we see and experience the world, because our brains are wired to do so, by the way, as though everything is solid. Generally, it's very consistent. There's a camera in front of me right now, and it's not like the camera is just going to disappear all of a sudden. It's there, and it stays there. But when you look at it from a physics point of view, from a quantum physics point of view, it's mostly air. Like this space, the relative space between the atoms is further from Earth to Pluto, I believe, somewhere like that. Something I might be off by a little bit. And so when you look at that from that perspective, it's like, what is a body? What is a mind? And it's interesting because it's not like this is theory. I mean, I guess it is theory technically, but it's very well regarded in the literature of physics, and it's where the atomic bomb comes from, for better or for worse. It's where nuclear power comes from. And the thing about it is that we don't use these ideas in medicine for the most part. I think it's a travesty. It's unfortunate because we're so focused on the physical form, right? We're so focused on what's above this trapdoor instead of what's below the trapdoor. And I think that's where prayer, for example, comes in. But in general, that's where spirituality comes in. And certainly someone who believes in an afterlife is going to feel better about a transition when they're dying than someone who doesn't believe in an afterlife, if they don't know where they're going. I mean, that makes logical sense. I think it's important to understand this. And I say this not to take hope away if you have a chronic illness, and not to say give up, because it's not about that. It's about shifting your perspective. It's about, oh, I may not get back to being the shiny brand new car that I once was, but that doesn't mean I can't enjoy my life. And one of my teachers, Ram Dass, after he had a stroke, he was very angry about it. And eventually he found peace with it, even though, I mean, he was this big man who was like a big presence on stage and very eloquent the way he spoke. And he had trouble talking, but he just kept doing it. He kept doing that and offering what it was. And I think that's the gift that some people have in this. It's not to say you don't give up. I mean, Ram Dass is a perfect example. He kept going to different practitioners to gain more and more function. I mean, he went from zero talking to being able to talk a little and stammer and so forth. So the thing about Ram Dass was, and other people as well, I mean, I use him as an example, is even though there was something that happened that was debilitating, there's a balance between trying to find help, but also accepting what is. And there's a really interesting idea about trust. There's a author I've talked about on the show before, David Riccio. He is a book called Daring to Trust. And he talks about four layers of trust. One is trusting yourself. One is trusting other. One is trusting in a higher power. And the other is trusting what is. And I think there's an aspect in health where, and really with everything, but in terms of health, where when we get a diagnosis that is difficult, that we don't trust it, we don't accept it. And it's not that you don't try and change what's happening. It's that you understand that maybe there are other reasons for this being here or this aspect of what's happening to you. And that's not to blame anybody. It's not because you did something wrong or you're a bad person or you're being punished, anything like that. I think it's just how life is. We all get experiences that are not necessarily enjoyable. In terms of, are you a spiritual person having a physical experience or a physical person having a spiritual experience? There's an aspect, and I've heard this from somebody. If you believe you're a spiritual person having a physical experience, the spirit is here to learn and to grow. And the results of that aren't about what's happening in this 3D experience. It's more about how do you respond to that experience? And that's not to say, by the way, that getting upset is a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with showing emotion. And this is one of the things that I think is misconstrued in a lot of spiritual circles, and both by people in the spiritual world and people who make assumptions about it. I'm a long-term meditator. I've had all kinds of experiences, spiritual experiences. But I still get upset. I still notice myself judging, particularly drivers. I've talked about this on the show a number of times. I got upset. I was doing my podcast editing and got really upset that I thought it was all gone, that there was an error in the save. And the thing about it is that just because you get upset doesn't mean that you're not, you know, a spiritual person or that you're doing something wrong. The question is how long do you hold on to something? And, you know, there are saints out there, they don't get upset about anything, I'm sure. I'm not one of those people. And I know very few people that are like that. And oftentimes anger is about setting a boundary, by the way, as a quick aside. But the thing about this that's so interesting to me, though, is the physical body is about maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain. That's a lot of what is going on in our physiology. This is the whole dopamine thing. I'm not a big person to treat the neurotransmitters because neurotransmitters shift. We know this from the science. Neurotransmitters shift with our meditation, with our spiritual practice, possibly with prayer. I don't think there's been a study on this. And so treating that isn't necessarily the way to go about it. If you can understand that a lot of these things are signals that something is out of balance in your life, then that's what you treat, not the immediate symptom. And I think that was one of the pieces that Dr. Tom was trying to put out. And by the way, when I talk about prayer, I need to say this. And I want to just say that this isn't a political thing. This isn't a either or. This isn't a, oh, you do prayer or you do science or you do something spiritual or you do science. I think that both are true. And this is the reckoning I think we need to come to personally. I think that we need to come to is understanding that both exist. Both are needed. How do we combine the two? And I know a lot of, and I've been reluctant to talk about a lot of spiritual stuff in the past. I know a lot of my colleagues have been as well, because we've been trained as scientists. And it's really interesting because the two most religious groups of scientists are quantum physicists, at least this was years ago, quantum physicists and developmental biologists. And I think it's because we don't have answers. They don't have answers. And there is something that's sort of mystical about life, about why we're here, about, I mean, I live in a place that is full of natural beauty. It's like, wow. I mean, I was on the Big Island a couple months ago and happened to see the volcano erupting. I mean, that's how this island is here. It's nothing short of miraculous that happened and the way it happened. And it's stunning. It's just stunning. And I think, if you take one thing away from this is as far as health goes, enjoy the beauty of the world, enjoy the miracle of life, and sort of understand that that is an important piece of what our experience is about. So that's what I got for you today. I really hope you enjoyed this. And if you have questions or comments, please feel free to email me or put them in below. Email me at info@askdrgill.com. And you take care.